Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. It's episode 138, I think. It's numbers. Episode numbers. Hi.
Episode numbers.
Episode
yeah, something.
Right? Numbers. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another fun-filled, action-packed, exciting episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. I am Nick.
And I'm Justin, and this is the first time in a long time that we've actually done a live stream. That's Ooh, right. I'm looking at you. I can see you. It's delayed, but I can see you.
Don't go too crazy. Don't go too crazy. But yes, we are live. I'm just ironing the kinks out and making sure everything is good to go for the advent of a live stream for The Cure 2.0, which as of release day, Justin, is 44 days away. Can you believe it? Like a month and a half. A month and a half to go. It's going to be, it's just going to be incredible. Welcome everyone who's piling in over into the live stream chat. We've got some fun stuff for you guys a little bit later here in the show. But Justin, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, man. I'm fantastic. I mean, I've got a beer in hand. I'm trying not to look at myself while I talk. That's a thing again. But yeah, I'm great. I had a 3-day weekend from work, and there's something that might possibly happen later this week. I kind of hinted at it in the patron only segment of the show. I have not gotten confirmation yet, but I guarantee you if it does happen, I'll be posting it to the Facebook page, and I'm praying that it does happen. You know a little bit about it, but I'm really just sitting here with my fingers crossed. So
it will be one of the most exciting things that's ever happened in terms of the show, if it actually happens. So I'm really, really hoping that it does. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Very much hopefully. We are thrilled to be here. We're going to be reviewing Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One, which I know Justin has got to be chomping at the bit to talk about because it's a movie that's jam-packed with all sorts of nostalgic things that probably gave him a throbbing boner the whole time he was sitting in the theater.
And I haven't talked to anybody about it. I've talked to nobody. I haven't even said anything online about it. So
not even the sauce?
Well, I mean, he saw it with us, yeah. So I mean,
I'm eager to see.
He's the only.
I'm eager to see what the sauce thought of it because I know the sauce hates the novel. So I'm eager to hear kind of what the sauce's feelings on the entire endeavor were. And director Brennick also hates the novel, but I did tell him to go see it because I don't believe that his problems with the novel will be mirrored over to the screen.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the review, but from what I've heard, like, I know a lot of people that really liked the book still liked the movie, even though they made a lot of changes to it. So I really don't know. But going in to see the movie, Nick, I went in total 80s garb. I mean, that's pretty much how I dress anyway. You know, vintage members only jacket, my vintage ski styled Oakley sunglasses and everything. And this guy walked up to me and he was like, "I'm going to take a picture of you." And I was like, "I guess, sure." And he's like, "You've definitely read the book, right?" And I was like, "No, not read the book. No." Nope. I love the 80s, though. So does that count? But yeah, it was a really cool experience going, though. I mean, a lot of people are really excited to see the movie, and obviously a lot of people have read the book, so you could tell there is a fan base going in, hoping for something special from it.
Yeah, it'll be really, really interesting to kind of see where a lot of people land on it. It's one of those films where I can see people landing kind of all over the board as far as ratings go, but Justin, we're going to get there a little bit later in the show, and why don't we get started with a little something that we do every single week here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. Justin, it's time.
Is that time for what are you drinking?
I'm back. Puke and rally. Yeah. Woo! Give me a beer.
And yes, Justin, I am going to go ahead and kick it right over to you and let me know what you've got sliding into your sphincter mouth. Ooh, wave that can around, baby. Wave that. That can looks like it's straight out of the 80s, too.
It is. It's fantastic. And if you can look at this, I know the quality's not that great. And I'm almost done with it because I've been drinking this through our patron-only segment.
It looks like mud.
I'm not sure. Well, there's a reason for that. I'm not sure you've had a beer like this before. Now, I've had the regular version of this before, which is the Aslan Beer Company's Pew Pew Pew. It's a triple IPA. But this is their version, Nick, that's been conditioned on raspberries, blueberries, blackberries, and strawberries, which most people are like, oh, that sounds gross. I had their other fruit-related triple IPA before, and I thought it was pretty good, but it was a one-timer. This one's a little bit different. It tastes like you're drinking a fucking alcoholic fruit roll-up, dude. Legit. I don't think that I could drink like a bunch of these, but Once in a Great While, it's a nice change of pace because all those raspberry flavors, especially the blackberries, I think, which add a little bit more to the bitterness of it, really shine through on the flavor for me. I like Pew Pew Pew. I actually have one can of it left in my fridge, but I had to grab this just because of the novelty factor. And yeah, you said that right. That can is just beautiful. So I like it. It's 12%, 0.7 alcohol by volume. Of course, we don't know what the IBUs are for it. It is a triple IPA. It's a fruit roll-up. It just legit, dude. Seriously, if you could take a fruit roll-up and like ferment that and make it into one of your beers and have it still taste like a fruit roll-up and get drunk off of it, that's what this beer is. So I like it. It's good. Dan, I know you should probably drink it. If I could get you one, I would. I know you're in the live stream there. You too, Jared.
I need to actually do a beer that's fermented atop some fruit and see what kind of fruit flavors I can really play around with. But that does sound really, really good. But of course, I don't really expect anything less from Aslan. And I've had that Pew Triple IPA. You brought it up here. You gave it to me.
That's correct. Yeah. So this it's just basically the same concoction, the same formula, except for just conditioned with those berries. So I had to grab it. And of course, it sold out within a day. So luckily, I made it there. But I have to ask you.
Excuse me, sir. I just have to ask you.
Goddamn.
What
frog.
Do you have guzzling down your gullet this evening?
Good God.
Watch out for Godzilla.
Yes, I'm drinking Godzilla.
The other green guy. The other
Justin,
green guy.
I wish I had some epic music. Here, wait a minute. I can just do the drum roll. Here we go. Get ready. That's right, baby. The return of the boot, because only the boot could hold dumpster juice, baby. This is it. This is her right here. And this is hands down the best IPA I have ever brewed. This is actually pretty damn good. It's not like, oh my God, like I'm going to die from drinking it. It's so good, but it is really, really good. It's got a nice prominent aroma of citrus on it, and it's just a light bitterness up front, and then it's just got like a full-bodied mouthfeel.
Mouthfeel?
Yeah.
Mouthfeel.
So yeah, I had to break out the boot to have some of this. Like I said, it's pretty damn good. I'm really surprised at how good it came out, so I can't wait to send you home with some of it.
Shoot the boot. Shoot the boot. Shoot the boot.
Or I'll just drink it all and I won't send you home with any of it. I also, in homebrew news, which should just be its own subsection of what are you drinking at this point, I transferred the Hobster's chocolate milk over into secondary fermentation and hit it with some more cocoa nibs to really, really enhance that chocolatey flavor.
Say cocoa nibs again.
Cocoa nibs.
Proceed. It's just the way you say cocoa nibs just puts cocoa me in the nibs. Mood, Nick. I'm sorry.
Cocoa nibs. But yes, so like I said, this turned out really, really good. The chocolate milk that I tried before I put it in for secondary, also really good. But that beer's still about a month out, so I'm not really counting too much on the flavor of what that one's going to be like until it's finished. But we've got a lot of stuff to talk about on the show tonight, Justin. We've got just different random stuff to talk about that we've been doing over the course of the last
random
week.
Shit.
And of course we have the live stream for The Cure 2.0. As I said, we're now 44 days away. If you're watching in the live stream, Justin's beautiful banner graphic is prominently up there in the top right hand corner of the screen. So it's right that he's trying to touch it right now. I'm gonna wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was fingering it apparently.
You sick fuck you.
I know, I cannot help it. But yeah, it's 44 days away. And I just want to take a moment here, Justin, and I want to shout out a lot of amazing shows that have been spinning the promo, promoting the event just outright, or, you know, dropping just a lot of love for us. I get bombarded all the time asking for the promos. So I've got a list. I've got a nice list here of all these different shows that have been spinning the promo and that are going to be hopefully a big, big part of this event. So I Shake My Head podcast, two lovely ladies out of Saskatchewan, the Netflix and Swell podcast. I've never heard of them actually. The Crossover podcast, podcast Rob and James Hatton, the STSD cast. We were on their show a couple of months ago, Justin, if you recall. doing, what did we do? Most five anticipated movies of 2018, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
I think something like that. Something like that.
Yeah.
Our brothers down in Perth, Paul and Wayne from the Countdown, and I got to say a very, very big get well soon to Wayne.
I sucked a dick last night.
That guy had a hip replacement. So he's now almost like halfway to becoming a Terminator, I think.
Holy shit, a hip replacement? Yeah. What the hell did he do to himself?
I think he's just had chronic hip problems, I guess, for like a couple decades now. So yeah, he had a hip replacement. He's actually going to be gone from the Countdown for about 4 weeks. I am going to be guest hosting the Countdown versus Justin Winters, Shock Top himself. And we're going to be counting down the top 10 movie fights. And basically, we're just going to be at each other's throats the whole time. But really, we'll be necking each other because
I mean, we love each other. If you need any help with that, you can ask. I mean, I'm here. I mean, you can ask.
I know all of the best movie fights already. Do you not have faith in me? Is this what it is? You don't have faith in me?
You know, I mean, I've looked at some of your other choices for some of the movie drafts before. Of course, yes, I have faith in you. But according to you, you don't have faith in me. So, you know,
I mean, if I get that horror community behind me, so I don't know. I have
to go. It's God damn it. It's real. How do you think I get so many votes? You think I'm paying for them? Bastards.
Oh, my God. Perry and Lindsay, hosts of the Hello Life and the Pod Stuff, both fantastic shows. They're amazing. They've been pimping us out like crazy. The Unwritable Rant podcast, Juliet Miranda, David, the producer, of course. Jake and Tom Conquer the World, which I was also on recently, which there was a little bit of a miscommunication between Tom Cole and myself because he messages me on Twitter and he goes, hey, do you want to be on a round table to talk about ways to save the DCEU? And I was like, okay, sure. And then he starts a group message like the day before of it or whatever. And he's like, adds Justin to it. And I'm like, wait, did you want Justin to be on this? Cause he never told me. So I didn't know. So we just completely forgot all about Justin.
Let's face it. You didn't want me on it. You wanted the spotlight all hey, on man, your own.
I would have been more than happy to have you on there with me. We got to just talk about,
to be fair,
DCEU.
It's all you, man. I let you have it. I was really not prepared for it anyway, and it would have been a heavy subject, so I have to take a listen to what you actually had to say on it. It's a subject that you're very passionate about, so I, you know, better left to someone that has a lot to say about
it. Well, I did not shit all over Justice League at all, I promise you. I had nothing but good things to say about it.
Okay, you must be either hammered off that beer or I'm hallucinating. Yeah, I don't know.
Something like that. But Adam Higgins from the Odd Dad Out podcast, who has been just promoting the hell out of the event, he's going to be on the event as well. The Interrupted Tales podcast, Sunshine and Power Cuts, Heather, also amazing. She has a whole separate webpage promoting the live stream for The Cure. The Shaken Not Nerd Boys, Duty, thank you very much for promoting us. The Movie Pass podcast, which actually gave us a recommendation over on Twitter this past week, Justin. It's a dad and his son who have Movie Pass, and they just are trying to review, like, I think 100 movies this year or something like that. And they're just podcasting.
Yeah. We've connected on the old Instagram there, and we appreciate that support there. You guys are awesome. Yeah.
The Miserable Retail Slave, Randy and Tommy, who are going to be leading off the event Friday night after we roll in the show for the intro. The Pod Couple, Afterburn 739, you crazy motherfuckers. Of course, they're going to be on Saturday at 7:30 at night, because why wouldn't they be? Dave and Jay, Super Movie Brothers, Podfix Brothers, Twisted Philly, Dina Marie, and her fiance, Jeremy, from Podcasts We Listen To. Both absolutely amazing. Now That I'm Older, Shade and Kenny, hopefully, Friday night. The SimPod and the Sea Dogs podcast, which is an actual play Dungeons and Dragons podcast. And I know I'm missing some. I'm sorry if I didn't give you a shout out. But anybody that plays the promo, and I mean this, anybody that plays the promo, you got stickers coming. Epic Phone Guy stickers and Livestream for the Cure stickers, because that's how much it means to us that you're promoting this event and getting the word out there so we can just try to raise as much awareness as possible. We got a lot of money to raise for a very, very good cause, and it really means a lot to us.
It definitely does. And you can also take those stickers, Nick, and you can slap them on your bare ass and have your spouse, significant other, or you can do like a selfie of your ass with a sticker on it and send them to me on Instagram, and I'll post them on Instagram.
Please, everybody mm-hmm. do that. And speaking of this, a live stream for The Cure, I actually wanted to announce this live on the air. But ladies and gentlemen, you can now make early donations and take a look. The progress bar is going to pop up right over my head here on the live stream. If you're not on the live stream, it's $55. Now, $5 of that is a test donation that I made just to make sure that the donation tracker on the Cancer Research Institute's website works, and it does. And Emily, from the story behind an ePodcast Productions, is our first early donation, jumped in there and donated $50 to the live stream for The Cure 2.0, which is absolutely amazing. Justin, we are 1.1% of the way there. I mean, it's a very, very small start, but yeah, I'm opening the floodgates. If you want to make an early donation, go to www.livestreamforthecure.com and you can donate right there on the page. And the tracker does work this year. Thank the Lord, because last year it didn't work and I had to keep telling people not to donate early because I was so afraid of their donations not getting tracked or anything. So yeah, right there above my head, $55 so far. Thank you so much, Emily. You're absolutely amazing. And
yes, thank you, Emily.
Out of the gate strong. Out of the gate very, very strong. We definitely appreciate it. So I would like to say, though, if you do plan on being on the event and you want to donate, there's going to be sound effects and fanfare and stuff like that that's going to go off during the event if you donate during the event as well. So if you want to make an early dono and do that or whatever, once we get merchandise live, that's also going to go toward that goal. So yeah, $55 so far. So, so exciting. I just thank you all so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you for everything that you've done for this event. It's going to be amazing. Why don't we go ahead and we're going to run into a quick break, and we're going to run into a break for some EFG history. But when we come back, it's time to talk Ready Player One. And later on in the show, I forgot about this until just now. I actually had the chance to
see. Of course you didn't.
I know. I had the chance to see Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle. So I'm going to give.
Oh, you did? What the hell? You should have told me. I would have watched it too. What the hell? What's wrong with
you? I thought
you
already saw it, didn't you?
No, I skipped it in theaters.
Wow, dude. Watch it. Watch it. It's so
fucking
good.
That's what Oysa said.
It's so fucking good. It's beyond better than I thought it was going to be. Like, insanely. Well, I guess I just talked about it now. I won't even talk about it anymore, but I will completely agree with Dan Brennick's assessment that we need to have a serious discussion about why Jack Black did not win an Oscar for his portrayal as a 16-year-old girl, because he's fucking amazing in it. He's so good. I kid you not. It seems silly. It's a great movie. It's amazing. Yes, Dan, that's why I said Dan Brennick.
God damn See, it, this Dan. Is what Dan likes to do. This is why the live stream. See, when we do this, Dan, literally, he's on the show without being on the show. He should just be on the show.
We just love
he could
Dan.
Just say it to us.
We just love Dan. But we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We're going to roll some EFG history, baby. And when we come back, Justin, it's time to talk Ready Player One.
We'll be
right back.
This week in epic film history.
I think we just need to get it out of the way, Nick. Are we going to cue this Nick's Rants theme? Are you going to cue it? Are you going to do it? Or are you just going to laugh your ass off the whole fucking time?
I can't cue the Nick's Rants theme because, like, literally, when this happened in the movie, and I'm going to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it or whatever, I don't care. It bombed horribly at the box office this weekend. Less than $20 million domestic. It's not going to make any money, and hopefully it'll go far, far, far away. But I about died when it happened. Okay, so in this film, all right, and Justin and I talked about this when we talked about the trailers and epic previews numerous times when we were looking at bits and pieces of the film, and I defended the fact that they were casting ScarJo as Major. I was like, you know, in the film, in the anime film, you know, the character's a cyborg. You know, the character could literally be pretty much, you know, whomever. You know, so I embraced it, you know, but I embraced it as kind of a hoping and maybe a prayer, you know, that they were going to, you know, stick a little bit truer to the source material than they did. And I mean, they did it's in certain ways and they didn't in other ways. I'm really not going to get into too much of a review about how good of an adaptation it is or isn't, because it's been so long since I've seen the anime film. But I mean,
yeah,
I did brush up on the plot.
Let's keep
of
that
it.
Out of it.
Yeah, but
let's keep that out of it. But
this film, it casts Scarlett Johansson, literally probably one of the most beautiful women in the world, as its lead actress. Okay, it changes, it whitewashes it. It does. Just let's get it out there in the open. It whitewashes the character of Major from Japanese to a white person. Okay. And then, in the plot of this fucking movie, It gets all the way down to the end, and then you find out that Kusanagi, you know, the original of the Japanese girl, was literally in the film whitewashed into the fucking major. They not only did they whitewash the casting in this, they rewrote Ghost in the Shell to literally turn it into a film about whitewashing. They took a little Japanese girl and they upgraded her into the most beautiful white woman on the planet and made her like 1,000 times better. Are you fucking kidding me? And I've been laughing about it since I left the theater today, because like literally they drop this plot point on you and they rush as fast as they fucking can to the ending, and then they just leave this bomb they dropped in your fucking lap, and I'm sitting there watching the end credits and all I can think is, oh my fucking god, they whitewashed the story itself.
And here's the thing, Nick, here's the thing. Let's get to it. Okay, so they did it. So they definitely did it, and they didn't seem to care about it, but they threw it in your face. And there was no purpose for it. They never explain it. No. They just do it, and they throw it in your face, and they just go, here, this is here for you. Accept this.
Oh my god.
Is that the way Hollywood works today?
Do you want me to do the happy thing?
I want you to do the happy thing.
Make with the happy.
Right now?
Right now.
All right.
So a lot of people ask me what our show's about. It's about happiness and this.
Balls.
Poop.
Balls and poop and balls and poop and balls and poop.
Balls. Boots. Balls. Boots. Balls. Boots. Balls. Boots. Balls in poop time. Balls in poop time.
Wait, sound check.
That pretty much sums it up.
That sums it up. We are Afterburn 739. We are a podcast about absolutely nothing and about everything. I am Leo. On the podcast is
Kitty
and
Cobra. Hi.
And
Fez.
Midgey. Hello.
You can find us on Twitter, Afterburn 739, iTunes, all those wild and crazy
stuff.
Places where you can
all
find podcasts.
We like to have a good time.
Perfect. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. We're about to kick into our featured review this week. We're going to be talking about Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One.
Ready.
Yeah, I know most of you saw it. It actually did pretty well at the box office. Right now, it's sitting worldwide at $181 million. Not the kind of business that Spielberg's used to with the likes of Jurassic Park, with Jaws, but it's still a moderate success for Spielberg. Those of you that have read the book, you already know what this is about. But for those of our listeners that are not aware of what Ready Player One is about, it's the year 2045. A chunk of the Earth's population live in slum-like cities. To escape their wasteland, people engage in a virtual reality world called the Oasis, where they can engage in numerous activities for education, to work, and above all, for entertainment. Users have discovered an Orax quest hidden within the Oasis, programmed by the creator of this game's James Halliday. The first to find the Easter egg within an Orax quest is promised full ownership of the entire Oasis to do as they wish. We follow an 18-year-old named Wade Watts, played by Ty Sheridan. He lives in Columbus, Ohio, in a slum with his aunt. He goes by the name Parzival within the Oasis. We follow him on his adventure inside as he becomes the first one to find the first of three hidden keys to become one step closer to becoming the winner.
Nice. That's it.
That's the basis of the movie.
Wow.
And, I'm going to throw it right on over to you, Nick, because you actually had the opportunity for once. You saw something before I had the chance to see it. So you saw it on Wednesday. I saw it on Thursday. What are your initial thoughts on Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One?
It's I had an issue or two, which we'll definitely discuss. But I think overall, this was a hell of a good fucking time at the movies. A hell of a good time. Like I said, I had some issues that I definitely want to talk about those, but I really think that this is really, really enjoyable. And I really, really do hope that people that necessarily, because I talked to Dan, and Dan said that the reason why he doesn't like the book necessarily is because basically the author of the book, whose name escapes me right now, basically spends like every other half of a page just basically jerking off to 80s nostalgia or nostalgia in whatever way. And I don't think the film does that at all. I think the film is definitely laden with the stuff. I think there's a lot of layers in it that you can really peel back, and we'll talk about those. But I don't think it dwells on any one piece of nostalgia or anything like that at any given time.
Well, there's an easy reason for that, Nick. And this may lead into my initial thoughts on the film, is that, you know, based on what Loy Sauce had told me and what I had heard from other peers of mine, that once Spielberg came in to actually decide to do the film, he took all the little, as we call them, Spielbergisms out of the film, so he wasn't tooting his old horn the whole time. So, I mean, I guess there's references to a lot of his films, because let's face it, Spielberg basically molded the 80s with E.T., you know, Poltergeist, you name it. He was the innovator as a filmmaker in the late 70s into the 80s, and he's what you think of when you think of 80s films. And I guess when he came in, he kind of removed all that because, well, he doesn't want his own film showing up all over the place. There's a couple little Easter eggs here and there because, I mean, let's face it, this movie's all about fucking Easter eggs.
Oh, there's a million of them. You could watch this movie five times and not pick out all of the different references and little hidden things in some of the wider effect shots. You'd never be able to pick them out. I read through a list of them. I didn't even spot half of them when I watched the film.
Yeah, no, there's a handful of them that I noticed that other people didn't notice. There's even two Batman 89 references immediately. There's one in the beginning, but we'll get to those. I'm getting ahead of myself. But my initial thoughts are, Nick, on this film, that I was let down by Ready Player One.
Wow. Wow.
I felt like anytime they went to the Oasis, I was immediately disconnected. I felt the Oasis was a soulless experience. I felt no emotion during any of that. And I know that they're kind of, you know, quoting the film as being the new Avatar meets the Matrix. And the difference between those is there was realism in those. And in this, I'm not a current gamer, so I don't look at games all the time. And the style the ILM went for when they made this film, Nick, as you can tell because you are a gamer, is it's a game world. It's a virtual reality. So there's little to no realism in there. It looks like a game the entire time. So for me, it was extremely hard for me to connect to those characters when they were within the Oasis, and I could not wait for them to get back to the real world.
Yeah, and that's actually going to touch on some of my issues that I had with the film, which I guess we can open on, because one of the things that I didn't think this film did well enough was connect you back to the real world often enough. I felt like, especially with the thematic bent that this film tries to go on, like this film tries to have kind of this overarching theme that we can touch on as we go here, but given the thematic arc of the film, I don't feel that they really spent enough time in the real world or that anything that happened in the real world really had enough consequences. Like a lot of the real world stuff really to me seemed weightless and kind of it didn't have enough impact and vice versa, if you get my meaning. Like I really felt, let's talk about it, because the theme of the film ultimately, or at least one of the themes of the film, is, you know, Halliday basically not wanting people to invest themselves like this deeply. Like his one big regret in the film is that he severed like the one true friendship he ever had when he, you know, took away from what is Simon Pegg's character. I can't remember his name. I need to pull up the list of characters for this goddamn film.
Ogden Morrow, the curator.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So he pulls up, you know, he basically takes control of the entire Oasis away from Ogden. And the whole film is basically about how much he regrets having done that. And for basically what I felt like the film was trying to go for was like, you know, you need to spend the time forming these real world relationships and spend the time outside of this, you know, virtual landscape, outside of this virtual environment. And then I felt like at the same time, while the film's telling you that thematically, it's not really doing anything to invest you in the outside world. at all.
Yeah, it's that, and it's spending the majority of the film inside the Oasis. And I understand that because that's why people are buying tickets, Nick. That's why they're going and paying admission to see this movie, because that's where they want to go. Fans of the book are going to see this, and gamers are going to see this, and people, they're looking at the visuals and the trailers and saying, that's a place I want to go, just like people did for Avatar or any other, you know, big budget tentpole fantasy film where you see this other world that you can't go to in real life. And I understand that. We escape every single day. We escape in our phones, Nick. We escape in movies. We escape in television. Our whole world is escapism at this point.
Yeah.
And there are some great social themes that Spielberg plants in there underneath that I felt were very insightful.
I don't
about,
even really,
you know,
feel like they're underneath. I feel like they're right on top of it. They're
well,
right
at
surface level.
Well, they are, but I guess maybe to the general film goer, they may not be on top as much as they are to us, because I mean, you get them disconnecting, but the way Spielberg makes the film, you spend the majority of the first half of the movie inside the Oasis. And for me, and as I talked about it on the show when we reviewed the trailers earlier on, I knew that it was going to be a problem for me, because I didn't like the aesthetic. I didn't like that it looked like a video game. Huge kudos for the opening action sequence, Nick. Oh my God, Spielberg still has it. It was enthralling. It
You're
was
talking about
exciting.
The race, right?
Yes, the opening race.
Yeah.
My only issue is that it's not real. Nothing looks real. They're not going for realism in the sense where, and I likened it to thinking about the Apes movies. We talk about them a lot on the show because they're favorites of ours. But when they do the CGI work in Apes, they're going for realism. When you see the apes in real environments, it looks real, because they're trying to make it look real. In this case, everything just looks fake because they're trying to make it look like a game. So for me, I'm disconnected from it because none of it's real. It doesn't look real. I know it's not real, so why should I care? I don't have a joypad in my hand. I'm not playing a game as I'm watching the movie. So for me, as much as I liked so much how it looked and how it felt, but there was no heart to it. It just felt like mindless nothingness to me. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
That might be one of those big disconnects that you don't really get into, because you're not really a gamer, so you don't really connect with the whole concept of you know, having a character who you have all this time built into him and you don't want him to die and have to lose all of your progress or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
It's a super exciting opening sequence. I thought literally we see some awesome, the Easter egg I was referring to earlier on. We see the T-Rex from Jurassic Park. We see my boy King Kong in it, and it's amazing. Like I said, we see a lot of different cool stuff happen, and it's so well put together.
King Kong's the man.
I know.
I love it. But yeah, and I actually, you know, I just feel like whenever they went back to the real world, and I don't mean the real world like the cutscenes that they had like in the game, like they did real world stuff as cutscenes, what they would normally do as a video game cutscene, which I thought was really great. I actually really, really loved that it was more of a realistic feeling. And I want to give huge props fucking right now to Mark Rylance as Halliday, because I thought he was fantastic in this film.
Oh, he was great, dude. I couldn't even tell it was him until halfway through the film. And I realized, I was like, oh my God, that's Rylance. Yeah. Like, he did a fantastic job there. He's one of the only casting decisions in this film that I can actually get behind.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. But my biggest problem that I had with it is that you're going for this great, and I love it. I love the idea of exactly what Spielberg's going for here, is this entire theme of disconnecting, this entire theme of creating real relationships, and this entire theme of real world consequences and what life is like in the real world and everything. But the problem is we never spend any time in the real world of this film. We spend so little time there. Like, they live in big fucking stacks. Why? Who knows? Who cares? It's not important. They just live in stacked up fucking trailers.
We know nothing about our central characters in this film that it bothered me to the extent where, why should I care? When they're inside the Oasis,
you don't get to know enough about them.
Outside
of the Oasis to really be as invested as you should be in their characters in the Oasis. And that was one of the biggest problems that I had with this film. It's going to knock a few points off of my rating, because as much fun as I had, because I enjoyed the stuff in the Oasis a lot. I really enjoyed a lot of what they were going for. I felt like Spielberg really did a lot of it justice. And you can't tell me that you did not love that second key quest when they were in the fucking Overlook Hotel for The Shining. You can't tell me you didn't love that.
Okay, we're going to get to the positives here, because that's not in the book. Because as soon as that sequence hit, Loisos elbowed me in the ribs and said, this is it in the book. And I absolutely loved that whole aspect of the film because it looked real, because the sets looked real. Everything about that had a sense of realism to it, and it felt like they were there. And it was a super fun time, dude. That was probably one of my favorite parts, scenes, I should say, in the entire film. And it was one of those like little sequences where I really started to get excited. I got goosebumps from it because it didn't feel shoehorned in for the sake of it. And that's what I'm going to get to as we move along with this review, Nick. I get they want to show all these cool things. And yes, I am the guy in the show that typically loves all the Easter eggs and loves all the homages and loves seeing like the fly poster on the wall. I love seeing this reference and that reference. But guess what? Like, I didn't give a shit about seeing all these characters that I love mashed into one place at the same time because they had no meaning. They meant nothing to the story. They were just there to be there. They were there, and within 2 seconds, your eye moved on to something else. There was no purpose for them to be there other than there's some person that's playing this game. It's their avatar. So seeing the Ninja Turtles next to Spawn meant nothing to me. But that sequence, Nick, was literally gold. Yeah. And right before that sequence, you do see a bunch of VHSs floating around, and they're trying to decide which one it was that Halliday took the girl on the date to.
Yep.
And you saw the Batman 89 VHS floating around. Of course I'm going to get excited about that. Of course I'm going to notice that and go, okay, I like that. But I mean, they're few and far between the moments that I actually got out of it that were pop culture references.
See, and what I'll actually, what I think, and when I watched the film, to me, I think that it wasn't necessarily Spielberg's intention to have you get excited about or really notice all that stuff. Like, it's there if you want to watch it on the Blu-ray and slow it down and try to pinpoint all these different characters. Like, I personally spotted like a couple dozen different video game characters and film characters, but I think anyway, when I was watching it, the scenes breeze by so quickly, especially the really crowded effect shots, that you can't possibly pick out all of the different effect shots totals. And I think that it kind of plays into that theme that I was talking about, where Spielberg's talking about disconnecting a little bit, is because it glosses over it in a way for me. It glosses over it just a little bit in terms of not paying attention and not really centralizing in on all of these different Easter eggs and all of these different little things that are going on in the world around it. You know, at least that's what I got out of it. I didn't necessarily take it away as any of that. I took it away as, wow, they're moving through this so quickly, so they're not dwelling on any of this stuff, which would have bothered me. It would have really bothered me if they would have taken the time to be like, oh my God, here's this, here's this, here's this.
No, of course not. No, I totally agree with you. I do agree with you.
Yeah.
I just think there's no reason for me to see Jason Voorhees in literally a split second get destroyed. Like, oh, I'm a Jason fan, so I should be excited because I saw Jason Voorhees there. No, actually, it angered me. Like, don't even show it. I liked that. Okay, the whole Chucky thing, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about everything. I don't think we should back.
The Chucky thing was fucking amazing.
That was great. I loved that because it served a slight, small, tiny little itsy-bitsy purpose to the story, in the sense that something happened to them and it caused them to slow down.
Great.
I loved that.
That's probably the first time I've ever liked Chucky.
But I'm going to get to one of my main issues. We're going to jump in on the cast here, and then we can move on to sections of the film that we enjoyed or we didn't enjoy. My main issue is Ty Sheridan, man. He feels like the typical kind of character that you would see in an old Spielberg film. Spielberg definitely laid it on thick with his old nostalgic filmmaking, the way that he used to make films. But I just found Ty Sheridan as Wade Watts, like, really stale. Like, I mean, when he's in The Oasis, his voice lends itself very well to Parzival, and I think that works very well. The voice is probably what mattered the most to his being cast. But number one, I don't care about his character. He lives with his aunt, and they're poor, and they live in a trailer in these stacks. And the film opens up so quick, like it never gives me a reason to care about him or to really feel anything for him. Let's face it, Nick, this film is Charlie in the Chocolate Factory in the new century. This is the new version. You have to go into the game, you have to win, you get the golden ticket, and then you get to control everything. It's literally that. It's Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. And this kid's not Charlie. I don't care about him at all. There's for me, there's no connection for me to care about him. We see a couple glimpses at his aunt's where, okay, he gets pushed around a lot, but the kid leaves in the beginning of the film and immediately goes to the van he puts on the headset, and then he's in the Oasis, and I'm like,
let me ask you a question. Why the van? What the fuck does that have to do with anything? Why does he have to go to an old dilapidated van in the middle of a fucking junk pile?
Well, to get away from his aunt.
Fucking Oasis.
To get away from his aunt
and
whatever
that. It's
so stupid.
It's pointless. It's pointless.
A secret hideout.
That annoyed
me. It's just like those old films, Nick, where a kid would have a treehouse, or they'd have a secret hiding place in the woods where they would go to meet.
Yeah,
and I think that Spielberg took it to the.
That.
That's where I got kind of the idea in my head from. But I mean, at the same time, my problem, and you know, this is Ty Sheridan. This is a kid that played Cyclops in in Apocalypse. Sorry, I misspoke there. And I did not care for him at all in the film at all. Well, who I wish the central character was, a character played so wonderfully by Olivia Cooke, was Artemis, also known as Samantha Cooke in the film. She was fantastic. I wanted to know so much more about her. I loved her in the film. She's so fantastic. She was also in Thoroughbreds, which myself and Lois Haas reviewed recently. She was on Bates Motel, which I loved. Fantastic actress. I love her so much. I was seriously like, I want to see more of this character. I wish that this character was the main character. I just had a problem with the Wade Watts character. I just felt he was extremely boring.
Yeah, his surrounding cast was much, much better. Not only Olivia Cooke as Artemis, but also you had Lena Waithe as Eck, and then their real characters, Samantha
Helen,
and Helen.
Yeah.
You know, they were really, really fantastic, and they were, like I said, almost a little bit more enjoyable than Wade was. I don't, I think the biggest problem that this film has, especially given the thematic arc that it's going for, I hate to keep going back to that, but it just doesn't do enough to invest you in their characters outside of the Oasis to make you care about them inside of the Oasis, because you know that inside of the Oasis they're putting on a show. They're not being who they truly are. You know, they're hiding different things about their identity or whatever, which they make a big ado about with a number of these characters once they finally get out. So that's really frustrating to me. And I'll tell you one thing that I was really frustrated about in this film, Justin. Ben Mendelsohn, who I love.
Oh, let's get to it.
I love him. Why did he feel like he was more cartoonish in the real world than he did in the game?
He was cartoonish. Okay, so he plays Nolan Sorrento. He's the CEO of Innovative Online Industries, who basically is seeking control of Oasis in this film. This is his goal in this movie, is to find all three of these keys so he can own the Oasis. And he was obviously part of the innovation of the game. In the beginning, you kind of see him de-aged for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I love Mendelsohn, but let's face it. Come on, dude. We've seen him as a way better villain in Rogue One, like a million times better in Rogue One. We've seen him as a better villain even in The Dark Knight Rises. He felt cartoonish. We've seen him do this before, and I feel bad for him. I get why they cast him. Of course, if Spielberg's like, hey, I loved you in this, I want you to be the villain in this, he's going to do it.
I just don't know if they remember to tell him which scenes did and didn't take place inside the Oasis. Because, like I said, I felt like he was more cartoonish in, like, his real-life persona than he was as, like, he was, like, a big, like, beefed-up Clark Kent-looking motherfucker in the Oasis.
Oh, yeah, that definitely looks like Superman. He definitely looks like Superman. He's got, like, the spit curl and everything.
I was, like, okay. But, like, he was even more cartoonish. But there were a lot of plots in this movie that just, like,
why does he care so much?
Spend enough
just
time
angry
in the
businessman. I mean, I guess he reflects what the majority of the people in our country are right now, the big business people. They just want money. That's all they care about. They just want to own something. They don't care about what, you know, it honestly reflects, Nick, if you think about it, the deep nitty gritty studio heads for motion pictures now.
They
really don't care about what the product is as long as it sells tickets. As long as it's making money, they don't care about how good the film is, or, you know, that's just because corporations bought into motion pictures in the late 70s, early 80s. And then, you know, the old studio heads were gone and things changed after that. And this may be even Spielberg's way, even though he's had carte blanche ever since Jaws, let's face it, he hasn't been impacted by that. But that's what I got out of it. I felt bad for Mendelsohn because I love him. And the moment, there were a couple moments where I smirked from his performance. But I mean, overall, I was like, dude, we're villain guys on this show. And as a villain, he is 80s generic villain. So I guess it fits what they were going for in the film, but I was just really unhappy with it.
Like I said, I felt like he was just super cartoonish pretty much the entire time that he was on the screen outside of the Oasis. And then inside of it, he was maybe a little bit better. But you know who I really loved in the Oasis was T.J. Miller's character as
Iron.
Oh, my
God. He's fantastic. Fantastic.
He's great.
Fucking loved him. He's so good.
He is really and truly that just kind of troll-level gamer who literally, like, their only object in the game is to spoil everybody else's good time playing the game. So I really, really loved his character in the film. And you know what? The one thing I have to take issue with this, just really quickly, this film wants me to suspend my disbelief to believe that. And how long had they been searching for the first key? How long had they been trying to pass the race to defeat the first key?
I don't know
key?
How long it's been, but it's been a while, though.
It's been a long
time.
I'm pretty sure it's been, like, years since how they passed away, or at least, like, over a year or something like that. There is no way that a game as popular as Oasis is, let's just put it in today's, you know, video gaming parlance, there's no way ever that a gamer would not have figured it out by that point. I have watched and I've just followed too many games for too long to see the kinds of Easter eggs and the kinds of hidden things that people in games are able to find out, like, that you would like never, like, even the creators are like, I never thought anybody would actually find it. Gamers are way too hardcore and fucking dedicated. This never, ever, especially the solution to the race puzzle, never in a million fucking years. Some dumb kid would have fucking accidentally hit reverse at the beginning of the fucking race and all of a sudden found it.
Right.
Like, it never. It's as a gamer and as somebody who knows, like, gaming as well as I do, there's no way in a million years somebody wouldn't have figured this shit out by now. No way.
I knew you were going to have something to say about the gameplay aspect of it, because a lot of it is based on gameplay.
Yeah.
Because they're playing the game. And
there's
I did like the I liked the idea that they go into the Oasis, Nick, not just to play, not just for entertainment, but they go in there because they work there. Like, industries actually use it to work and they make money off of it and they get educated by it. And I like that it was the center for a lot of different reasons. And I liked that because, dude, literally with technology the way it is now, we're headed there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not far fetched by any sense. But I just, man, for me, I feel like if this is just me, you know, picking away at it, I know that Spielberg had said that he had worked with the ILM to oversee the visual effects, meeting for 3 hours, three times a week, every single week until the film was completed and in theaters. He said it was the most difficult movie he had done since Saving Private Ryan. Like, he took a lot of effort and really cared a lot about how this film was going to look. And I definitely can see, you know, the reflection of what's been in, what's been revolutionary, and where he wanted to go with the visuals of this film. I just wish that there was some sense of realism to the Oasis, so I didn't feel like I was looking at a video game. I mean, am I disconnected from it just because I'm not
a
gamer?
I think that has to be just a little bit of you just being so disconnected from that world, because I personally loved the design aesthetic of the film. I thought it looked fantastic. And, like, I never for a moment, like, that was one of the things that when I watched the trailers and stuff like that I was really wondering. I was like, is this going to kind of watch like you're watching a video game? And it really, really does. And I think that is one of the aspects that this film absolutely knocks out of the park. I loved that about it. But then again, like I said, I come from that world and you don't. Like, I love watching video game cutscenes. I'll fucking sit on YouTube sometimes and just watch video game cutscene movies, you know, because modern video games have, like, basically feature length films hidden in their cutscenes if you just watch them all back to back. And it's really, really great. And there's a lot of amazing, amazing graphics work and stuff like that exists out there in video games. So I loved every single bit of that, every single bit of it. And I didn't know how you were going to necessarily react to it, but I think that's just you and your preference. That's just what you prefer, because this was never going to be shot realistically. This was never going to be shot to look realistic. It was always going to be shot to look like a game, I think. And yeah.
Right. Which just the animation, I guess, the way that it was done, it just put me off a little bit. Yeah. And that's just something that for me personally, I couldn't connect to. Of course, you know, I like some of the references, you know, I like the Zemeckis cube, and that when you use it, you hear the Back to the Future theme. And I'm going to get to a few things right now as we're wrapping up the review that I actually loved. You know, John Williams was actually collaborating with Spielberg on this, because he does pretty much all of Spielberg's films. And he decided to end up doing the post instead.
Yep.
So they brought in Alan Silvestri, who did the score for Back to the Future, and what an amazing job. I loved this score so, so much. You actually get a lot of the little Back to the Future hints and themes throughout that also feels like a score to an adventure fantasy film of the 80s, which really felt perfect for me.
It does, yeah.
The music was just outrageous. I loved it so much. And like I said, I liked a lot of the performances here. And the ending, even though it was overload, man, the ending, once shit starts to hit the fan and they know what they have to do, and that end battle, I was a little bit of a fanboy there because we get to see one of my favorite characters in fandom, and I did not expect to see him, dude. We got to see Mecha Godzilla, and I did not expect that. And when that happened, dude, I had goosebumps everywhere. I was like, holy shit. I mean, it was their version of Mecha Godzilla. Let's make no mistake. Well, yeah, it wasn't like, but I mean, like,
it was still baller as
hell. Awesome. It was so awesome. That end battle had too much going on. It was a clusterfuck, but there were some moments in it where I felt like, hey, man, sit back. It's Spielberg. And he did do it very well. He did it about as good as anyone could do it. So that's why I felt safe in those scenes and just sat back and enjoyed them.
Yeah. I really think the missed opportunity here is to spend more time outside of the Oasis, to spend even more time on the relationship between Holiday and Morrow. Because like I said, Mark Rylance in this film was fantastic. He is by far the best thing about this film, and the film just doesn't even use him nearly
and
enough.
And dude, Simon Pegg, dude, doing an American accent,
Pegg was good,
by the way.
Pegg was good.
He was good. And he's very underutilized, but I liked him in it. I think those two characters, we kind of got a little bit more of them. And actually, you know, to be honest with you, I may have liked Ty Sheridan a little bit more if they had more scenes outside of the Oasis with Olivia Cooke, because those characters, they had a chemistry, but I didn't get enough of it in the real world to really connect it to they were great in the Oasis together. Their voices melded perfectly together. So I know what Spielberg was going for, but in the real world, we only got a glimpse of them here and there. It was very quick. And that was it. I mean, for me, I wish I had a few more minutes in the real world to really care about those characters.
That's really where my main criticism is always going to lie with this film, is that it just doesn't spend enough time. Like I said, especially for the last time I'll say it, I promise, is the thematic arc of the film. I just wish that it had spent more time in Oasis to kind of reflect what it was going for. Instead, it really gives us the barest bones of exposition outside of Oasis just to keep shoving us right back into it. Because obviously, it's like you said, that's what they were there to do. That's what they were there to sell tickets.
That's why people people are going in to see the movies for that. And I understand why. I'm not cold to the fact that that's why people were really excited. And I got to see it, obviously. And yes, I saw it in 4K with Dolby Atmos. It looked stunning. It looked beautiful. But for me, it just felt like, again, I was watching a video game, and I don't feel emotion when I watch a video game. And sometimes I'll play like the Friday the 13th game on my Xbox and shit. Like, I'm not totally cold. I mean, I'm hip to it. I played video games until I was 18. I'm just not a current gamer, but I couldn't feel like how I wanted to feel. And I tried to force myself to it at the same time. I get why people are loving the film. Most of the people I know are loving it. For me, I couldn't get that connection.
So, man, what did the sauce think of it? I'm eager to know what the sauce thought of it. Did he tell you at all or no?
Yeah, he did. And surprisingly, Nick, he may want to tell you for himself, but he was pretty lock and step with me, man. He wasn't a huge fan of it either. I mean, he had read the book, so he's coming from a different place. But I won't lie to you, though. You know, we did talk for about 45 minutes after we watched it, as soon as we left the theater, as people were walking by us and knowing that he is the creative guy at Alamo, trying to talk to him about it. And a lot of people loved it and loved all the references. Hey, man, they referenced Excalibur and they referenced this. And you saw the Mad Max poster on the wall and literally all of that stuff. And I didn't
give a shit about any of the references. Not a one of them. Well, I like that they were in there, but that's not why I watch movies. I don't watch movies to see other things referred to.
And I'm not going to lie. Of course, I loved the fact, Nick, that the fucking movie started out playing a song from one of my favorite bands of all time, Van Halen. Van Halen, not Van fucking Hagar. Van Halen with Jump, and I loved that. It set the film off in a perfect way.
Don't be dissing Sammy. What's wrong with Sammy?
I like some Sammy. Some Sammy, but it's Van Hagar. It ain't Van Halen.
Why you got to hate me?
I have both greatest hits albums. I have the Van Hagar greatest hits album. It's just,
I saw Van Halen live in concert with Gary Cherone in 1998.
I'm not envious of
It was a sad time.
I had the opportunity to see Van Halen 3 years ago with David Lee Roth, and I unfortunately didn't go, and I keep kicking myself to this day. But some of those moments were great for me. I'm not going to lie. Like, 80s nostalgia is me. That's how I live my life. I listen to synthwave every single day. I watch 80s movies all week long, you know, every other day. This movie should have been for me, but it wasn't. But I feel like Loisos agreed with me on some of the same aspects, where the action sequences were very great. And the ending, I felt, was very powerful. I really loved the ending a lot, actually. So yeah, well, even though it was a little bit too less too late.
Throw the number on it, baby. What do you got?
I'm giving Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One a 6 out of 10 rating. There was enough there for me to be entertained. It was more of a disappointment, Nick, than a hate. And it's more of a preference because of the fact that I didn't like the visual aesthetic they went for. Had it been slightly different, I probably would have been totally excited about this movie. But overall, it was a missed opportunity for me. I still enjoyed a lot of it, but yeah. 6 out of 10 for me.
For a lot of different reasons, but I'm so close to you. I couldn't give it a 6. I bumped it just to a 7 because I did have a lot more fun with this, I feel, than you did, because I really bought into the visual style that they were going for right away. I absolutely loved that aspect of it. So I'm going to go ahead and throw a 7 on it. It's not perfect. And like I said, I really wish they would have spent a lot more time outside of Oasis, and I really wish they would have, especially like that story, the friendship of Holiday and Morrow, and then the way that it breaks down and everything. I wanted to see so much more of that. That was by far the film's best hook, and they abandoned it half the time. They just didn't focus enough on it, and I wish they would have. So yeah, 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10. So barely recommendations from the Epic Film Guys.
No, it's still a recommendation. I mean, for me, it's still yeah. I still tell people, you know, of course, I know people are going to go see this, and I hope they do, because I still want Spielberg to remain a powerhouse. And, you know, I also say it in this sense where it was an entertaining movie.
It's
film. I'm seeing people that are literally saying, Nick, Spielberg's worst film. And I'm like, you're literally like just trying to find reasons to hate this movie. It's not anywhere near that level.
Haven't they ever seen Jaws? I'm kidding. Jesus, he's going to kill me.
I'm going to drive all the way up there right now. I have enough gas in the tank right now. Just saying. The reality is,
yeah, it's not even close
Spielberg
to his worst movie.
Spielberg did a very good job with this film. No, it's not at all. It's very entertaining. If you haven't seen, I still recommend it. Yeah. I feel like a lot of people are enjoying it. It's definitely the type of movie to go take your kids to. Adults can relate to it because all the nostalgia. And you love it. You're a gamer, and most people are gamers. So check it out. It's still a recommendation from the Epic Film Guys.
All right. And we are going to go ahead and we're going to roll into another break, ladies and gentlemen. Then we're going to come back and close out the show with just a few more whatever things we're going to do. We'll be right back.
This week in Epic Film History.
I think we've talked about this privately. I don't know if we've ever really talked about it on the podcast. Oh my God. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. He's... I think he fought him back. The booze... He wasn't able to grab a hold of the booze and get out. Whew. Man. Dude. It was close. It was close.
I'm very happy about that. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you're clapping. I took care of that pretty quickly. I'm proud.
I think right now Emily's crying. Our next question comes from the Drunken Dork podcast. That's at the Drunken Dork. Who'd win in a fight, Pee-wee Herman or SpongeBob SquarePants? I did say they could ask any questions. So, Justin, who would win that fight?
Pee-wee Herman. No contest.
Are you fucking kidding me? SpongeBob is a warrior. He was trained by Sandy Cheeks in the art of karate. He would beat Pee-wee like a fucking red-headed stepchild.
I don't think so.
Not even close.
Pee-wee all the way, man.
Pee-wee all the way. Get the fuck out of here. Everything that we've gotten in the past 30-plus years has just been this really dark, brooding interpretation of the character. And that's the entire idea behind the voice that Arnett's putting on him. Because he's like this really like over-the-top, dark, like brooding character. You know, and I can't wait. I think it's going
to
be great.
And honestly, just to throw this out there, obviously you forgot about Batman Forever and Batman and Robin there, Nick. But you listen, said
those were
brooding.
Those were the darkest films in the series. Mr. Freeze fucking freezing everybody and just murdering everybody like that. And then you have Two-Face. How many, you know, innocent bank guards were traumatized? Oh, were traumatized when he
for
stormed
the rest of
that
their lives.
Bank.
I mean, they the dude lives.
He made
so
fun of him for being fat. I mean, fat shamed that guard.
He did.
How do you think he feels?
In your case, beer and pizza. How does that make him feel? That's horrible, Nick. That's worse than death, dude.
Do you like movie reviews? How about true crime stories, celebrity interviews? Well, you won't get any of that here. I'm a stay-at-home dad with four boys and a night job. I don't have time for all that crap. What I do have time for is browsing the web for weird and idiotic news stories. Then I bring my favorites to you every week, along with my own weird life lessons and favorite podcast recommendations, because, hey, sharing is caring, right? So subscribe to Odd Dad Out in Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or your favorite podcatcher. And follow me on Twitter at Odd Dad Out and add a little weird to your day.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much for hanging out with us here for the Epic Film Guys podcast. Full review, of course, of Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One. Honestly, not the reaction I was expecting out of you. I was expecting you love everything. You have fun with everything. So to hear you come in under me on a film, it's rare. It very infrequently happens.
I mean, man. You know, I still had fun with it. Don't get me wrong. I just was really disappointed by it, I think.
Yeah, it's just you usually never come in that much lower than me on a film. So it was really, really surprising. But we've got some other stuff to do here before we wrap up the show, Justin. So I wanted to jump onto a couple other things. And just let everybody else know, I don't know, where I've been appearing lately. Oh, I can't minimize Skype when we're on the live stream. I forgot because it'll freeze your image in place and you'll just look like you're high or stoned or both or whatever. I don't know. But over on the Angry Old Man podcast, it's not out yet, but he told me within the next couple of days, I wrote a short play called Afternoon Lunch for his cast of characters that he acts out. And basically it's them going to a hot dog shop and it's going to be really, really exciting. I also did a small pre-recorded segment for him where I talked about the live stream for The Cure. Also appeared over on Loot Quest, the newest show to join the Podvix network. Well, between them and the Scooby-Doo thing, which is still really cool. I still really need to check that out. But this is our good buddy Shampoo. Shut up Shampoo. Hashtag Shut up Shampoo. Is doing a Star Wars role-playing podcast, and I got to play a protocol droid called C-3PR, and I had an absolute blast with it. That was a lot of fun. Also got to promote live stream for The Cure over on that event, so it was really, really fun. And I was on just earlier this afternoon. He messaged me an hour before I left work. Pete, one of our good buddies over in the UK on the Smorgasbord podcast. And I got to be on with somebody who is in Cambodia, somebody who is in Israel, as well as Pete. And it's a little comedy podcast out of the UK. It's really, really funny. Does all these funny news stories, funny news articles and stuff like that. Really fun. I've been on that show a few times. And once again, plug in the live stream for The Cure. I am nothing if not a whore to raise money for this amazing event. And as we said
totally
earlier,
are.
Boom, right there over my head. If you're watching over in the live stream, we are 1.1% of the way toward our goal, a big, big $50 donation from Emily from The Story Behind. Thank you so much for getting us started off. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to make an early donation, head over to livestreamforthecure.com and you can make a donation right now. Right now. It's amazing, Justin. It's amazing. This event is going to be so much bigger than last year. I'm so excited. I can't wait for May 18th to the 20th.
Hey, I just got to ask you. I want to know all about this. How am I going to benefit from this whole ordeal y'all are talking about on the show tonight?
How dare you?
I agree, Paul.
Hello?
How dare you?
Hello?
How
Is
dare you
there?
Try to cash in on a good thing that we're trying to do here? We are trying to raise money for cancer research, and we do not need your stank, filthy ass in here stinking everything up.
Is this one of those automated services where I call the number and no one answers and it goes straight to direct answering machine? Do you remember the answering machines with the little tape in it? It may not even know if it's picking up sound or not. I don't even know where I am. I got to walk into Justin's tonight. He actually let me in the door. He said it's been too long since I've been on the show. He told me, you're making a beer with my name on it, and I need to make some money, so that's why I'm here.
I need to cut like a little graphic I could put over his Skype window whenever he like last year. It was really funny because it was last year in EFG history. There was music playing over the clip or whatever. They didn't pull it. But when we were on the show, he went through this whole rigmarole of ducking down off of the camera. And he was like messing with the microphone and stuff. And then he did the hoster and then came back onto the light. He's doing it again.
Hey, all I like is my shitty-ass alcohol. I'll take Cristal and all that nonsense, too. I actually have some rye whiskey in the cupboard that Justin left me that Loy Sauce didn't drink after he watched some shitty horror movie the other night. He fell asleep the other night, and I took his hand and put it on a certain part of me and thought maybe something would happen.
Kill him! Hang him! Hit him!
He ain't good enough for my pleasures, as I like to call him, but...
Hey, oh my God.
All I want to know is if you're using my name and if you guys aren't going to talk to me anymore, I still want my percentage off of this show. Don't forget about me.
It's percentage off of this show. Oh my God. Speaking of percentages off of the show, I guess we can announce that there was a winner. We had one whole person enter our contest last week to win a digital copy of Star Wars The Last Jedi. So, Justin, why don't we go ahead, and I've actually got it queued up right here in the live stream. I'm going to go ahead and pull this up here. Congratulations. Here we go. Win a 4K digital code for Star Wars The Last Jedi. There's Mark Hamill right after drinking that green titty milk. Look how happy he is. And the answer to this week's trivia question, one respondent. Ladies and gentlemen, congratulations. Scott LaVar with the correct answer there. For Luke Starkiller. Dan says Star Wars sucks, is. Hence why I didn't enter. Thank you, Dan. Yes, congratulations, Mr. Scott LaVar. You've got a digital code for Star Wars The Last Jedi headed your way. And actually, I actually pulled this up here. That's right over on the live stream for thecure.com. Love you guys and what you're doing from Emily from the story behind with that $50 donation, big $50. We really, really appreciate it. And I also wanted to go ahead and announce, I put it out there last week, Justin, all people had to do was go into the reaction thread and say that they loved the Hopester, that filthy bitch ass motherfucker that was just in here, and say that they loved the Hopester. So here we are in the reaction thread. This is the Hopester's dumpster. See, there he is. There's the Hopester right there. There's his eye. And we had one person check in and say that they love the Hopester. Patrick Sherwood, of course, the Hopester's best friend. And Patrick Sherwood is, for the first time ever, going to get to experience patron-only status on the show. So we can't wait to get that to you, Patrick. So thank you very, very much for taking part in that. If you're not a member of the Hopester's Dumpster, Facebook.com/groups/epicfilmguys. It's right there at the top of the page. You can get over there. We do all sorts of fun giveaways. We do all sorts of fun discussions over there about movies that you won't see on the main Epic Film Guys page. And you get to win all these trivia contests. This is the only way to win. This is it. And Jared Taylor's still waiting for his The Last Jedi from Amazon. Dan Brennick hates the Hopester. We know, Dan.
We can't change that. We hate him too. But I mean, it's not. No, Dan, you're wrong. There's not a connection between me and the Hopester. We're not the same at all. It's not like the Lisp, dude. It's not at all. I mean, the Lisp met you, though, at Nick's wedding. The Lisp met you in the bathroom.
In the bathroom?
Yeah, in the bathroom. He told me all about it, dude. There was the whole thing with him and Dan and.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't think Dan's admitted it to this day, but I can't maybe someday he'll come out and talk about it. I don't know. I can't even believe it.
But ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it, I think. For anything else you want to do to wrap out the show, Justin, anything else you got to announce? Anything else you got to throw out here before we run out on the show?
Mask? Is there a man behind it?
I'm so happy I have you as my best friend.
We have Tommy Wiseau. We always have Tommy Wiseau.
But is there a man behind the mask?
I don't have that. I don't have that queued up right now. What are you trying to do to me? Are you trying
Where's
to make
the
me
man
improvise?
Behind the mask?
You're trying to make me improvise really quick. All right, fuck you. I'm doing it now.
It's getting warm out. It's getting warm out.
Are you out of control?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wildly, wildly out of control.
Are you the man behind the mask?
I fucking hate you. Is this what tonight's show is going to be like?
I'm the man behind the mask.
I'm the man behind the mask.
And I'm out of control. Man behind the mask. He's the man behind the mask. And he's out
even,
of
even
control.
Even Tommy likes it. Even well, Tommy's all about this.
I'm the man behind the mask. I'm the man
me.
Behind Daddy, the mask. And I'm out of control. And he's out of control.
I'm the man behind the mask.
I think we've reached some kind of really weird meta level where we're now playing our own audio clips and then commenting over the top of it.
And I'm out of control.
In a few minutes, bitch.
Hey, who the fuck are you?
Come on, even the hopester must know who Tommy Wiseau is. Come on. Don't even give me that. I can't talk anymore.
You sucked his dick.
I can't talk
no,
anymore
I
either. And
I
no,
didn't
I
touch
did not.
His pee-pee.
No, neither of us did. Neither of us did it.
I didn't touch
did it.
It.
Blame Moy Sauce.
It was probably
Moy
Sauce.
He did all of it.
I sucked a dick last night.
See?
It there was Moy Sauce. Yeah, he did it. I knew he did it.
Well,
that's it for the show, ladies and gentlemen.
You guys are, first of all, if you're over there in the live stream watching, thank you very much for joining us. Again, we are going to be rolling with the live show leading up to the live stream for The Cure because, again, we're trying to spread the word, number one. And number two, I really just want to get used to being back on the live stream because I'm just not used to it. I've still got beer in my boot, Justin. I don't know what the hell you've been doing. There's still a little bit of dumpster juice right there.
That's my dumpster juice, damn it. I want it delivered to me immediately.
I do still have some dumpster juice. I have plenty of it left for you, so you can definitely go home with a whole bunch of it. Remember, Nick, Bill Sutton sucks. Thank you, Dan. Even though Bill is one of our sponsors, and we absolutely love him. Thank you very much, Bill. Again, if you are a show and you're taking part in the live stream for The Cure 2.0, play that promo. Spin our promo for the live stream for The Cure 2.0, and you've got stickers coming at you. Don't you waggle your finger at me. I can see what you're doing now. You naughty son of a bitch. Was Danielle standing like off the screen and you were like, I don't want to know what kind of weird kinky shit you guys are going to do later.
No, I'm just telling you, man. I've been seeing stuff lately. I'm seeing gorillas.
Oh, my God. But yes, thank you all very, very much for listening. I don't know. What are we doing on the show next week, Justin? We have, I don't know.
I will be reviewing A Quiet Place at some point next week on the show. Loy Sauce should be checking in this week before you hear this episode with a review of Unsane. Yeah, that's right. That movie that was shot on an iPhone. Loy Sauce saw it. He's going to review it for all of you guys out there. Pimp. And other than that, Nick, I don't know because I probably won't be at the movies. Hopefully, fingers crossed, because I'll be somewhere even better, maybe even possibly part of a movie. Yeah. But I can't say much more than that because I have not received confirmation.
Those fingers crossed, it's going to be absolutely amazing. But over the next few weeks on the show, whether Justin wants to do it or not, we're not going to watch them all because we couldn't.
I'm not watching them all.
I don't have the time for this show. I might watch one per phase. We're going to do a small Marvel retrospective leading up to the release of Avengers Infinity War because it is on the horizon, Justin. We are in the month. I'm seeing it in less than 4 weeks now, 27 days. I'm excited. I am super, super, super excited to see it. I am kind of starting to get a little bit excited, which is kind of crazy. So
that's so weird. That's so weird. I mean,
next week
on
the show,
we'll
talk about phase one. We'll talk about our kind of maybe we won't do like official lists. I don't know what we're going to do exactly yet. We'll get back to you on it, but it'll be some kind of whatever for Marvel phase one as we count our way down toward Infinity War. But until next time, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all so very much for listening. So you guys are amazing. Don't forget, for $1 a month, for less than the cost of a double cheese for the Hopester, you can become a patron of the Epic Film Guys podcast and get access to all of our extended episodes, which begin with the patron-only pre-roll, which half the time is just us bullshitting about whatever, and other times is us making fun of Loy Sauce and telling him he sucks a lot of dicks and whatever. It's all sorts of fun.
That's right. We like to have a good time.
A good
time. When I was 10, I used to love watching my dogs hump. We had a good time.
Hey, try not to suck any dick on the way through the parking lot.
It's important advice to remember. Get over to Apple Podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe to the show. We're still trying to get to 100 reviews, I think. I stopped checking because we were offering the biggest swag bag ever.
It was depressing.
Yeah, we were offered the biggest swag bag ever, and then nobody was leaving us reviews, so we just said, fuck it. So we don't fucking care anymore. Who cares? Review us on there if you like the show, if you love the show. Please, we would appreciate the support. Maybe we'll still give something away when we hit 100. Probably a date with Director Brennick. I don't know. Something. I don't know. We can do that, can't we? A double date with Director Brennick and Loy Sauce. You can have a three-way with them at the end of the night.
Sure, why not? Sure, why not?
It's
give happening. Them away.
It's
give them away.
Happening, ladies and gentlemen. For
some snazzy young men
myself,
there.
For Justin, thank you all very, very much for listening to the show. And ladies and gentlemen,
we will see you at the movies.
Check out more shows like it at oddfixnetwork.com.